What's up, guys? Welcome back. Today we're talking about sales again, surprise, surprise, but in a different way, because my guest today, Mr. Peter Anthony, doesn't even use the word sales, despite doing this as a job for almost 40 years. We talk today about the power of pitching, influence, and instead of sales, collaborative conversations. Peter takes us on a journey of why storytelling and collaboration is such an important part of sealing a deal and building relationships. And it's really exciting to see the way he talks about that. He has a wealth of experience. He's written a book called Collaboradabra, The Power or the Magic of Collaborative Conversations. And he's a really fun guy to talk to with some great stories. I think you're going to love this episode. I quickly want to give a big shout out to Triple Effect Video, my friends over there who have now taken over the production of this podcast and these videos. They're amazing. I think you guys should absolutely reach out to them if you need more video content in your business. They haven't asked me to say that. I just think they're great. So without further ado, let's get on with the episode today. Mr. Peter Anthony, the collaboration guy here on Coaches to the Moon. Let's do it. Welcome back to the Coaches to the Moon podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Today I'm joined by a man who is just a few meters away from me in reality, but we're very blessed to be joined back again by the power of the internet. Mr. Peter Anthony, also known as the Collaboration Guy, is a very, very interesting consultant with his approach to pitching, influence, and I suppose the opposite of sales. We're going to talk about his book, Collaboradabra, The Magic of Collaborative Conversations. Here he is to share his secrets today with us, Peter Anthony. Thanks for being here, mate.
G'day, Alex. Nice to be with you and the listeners.
We, embarrassingly enough, realized that we met each other face-to-face just a few weeks ago. And in fact, Thursday this week, I was filming just outside the door of the studio in which you currently sit.
That's right. It was bizarre because I was in this room doing podcasts, and I walked outside the room and I bumped into Alex doing what? Doing podcasts. I thought, this is really weird. I think we should hook up and have a conversation since we're both you're hosting podcasts and I guest on podcasts. So maybe we should have a conversation.
Yeah, I couldn't find anyone to have me on their show, so I had to start my own one. So, well, I mean, I'll do anything to get people to talk to me, Peter, but that's what you're about. So, firstly, you're a beaches guy. Have you always lived on the northern beaches?
I have. Embarrassingly enough, Alex, I was born in Manly Hospital, and my parents also met in Manly. My mum's from the south coast of New South Wales. My dad's from Queenscliff. They met at the Harbord Hilton Hotel, of all places. And the first kiss they had, so my dad tells me, was when he was taking my mum for a walk on a date between Manly and Shelley Beach on that walkway. So I was potentially conceived in Manly as well as born in Manly as well as I love it. And this morning, as I was just mentioning off air, I went for my favourite swim, which is from Manly to Shelley Beach and back in the Bold and Beautiful Gang. It's getting a little bit chilly now in winter, but it's a great way to start the day.
That swim that Peter just mentioned, that's about, what, about 750 metres each way in open water?
Yeah, depending on the tide. The moon's full now, so the tide's pretty low, so the swim's a bit shorter. So you almost walk to the point, so that you probably lose maybe 100 metres or so. Yeah, it's about 750 k's, but 1.5 each way. It takes about 20 minutes or so. It's a great gang of people, nice way to start the day. You get to wake up, have a coffee, see your friends, talk a bit of stuff about who swam faster than somebody else, and it's a great way to wake up, I guess, just dive in that cold water.
Yeah, mate, I've mentioned it a few times to people, that swim is my Everest, because I'm very fit on land. When I get in the water, my lungs, my heart, my brain doesn't work as well as I want it to. So that swim there, I'm not scared of the sharks. I think it's the power of the ocean itself. So I commend you.
Can I give you some of the secret sauce, if you like, Alex? What I do, I like swimming in a group. I always make sure there's somebody outside me. So there's somebody closer to the ocean than me, because I think if a big shark is going to come, that he gets eaten before I do. That's my strategy. So just keep on the inside lane, yeah, if you like. And when the sharks come,
it's like keeping your wife sleeping. Yeah. Yeah, it's like having your wife sleep closer to the front
Yeah.
door. You know, protect yourself at all odds, at all costs. Well, we could talk
Unless you're
about.
the Blade Runner, Alex, and your wife gets up to go to the bathroom and she ends up getting shot, but that's okay. That's a whole different story.
Goodness me, the things that could happen on this podcast, Peter Anthony, brings up the big topics straight away. Before we dive into the ins and outs of South African judiciary processing, let's talk about your work, mate. For context, we want to talk about your style of pitching and collaborative conversation on here. But just for some context, you had a nice long career in corporate consulting, then you went out by
Yes,
yourself just with a laptop, correct?
absolutely. And I was corporate consulting in sales and marketing. I worked for several years at IBM in sales roles, and I worked with big ad agencies like Ogilvy's and Young and Rubicam, making ads. So I understood the sales and marketing side. With a friend, we started a sales consulting business, which we ran for 10 years or so, and now I'm doing it for myself, but I've been pretty much always doing the same thing, Alex. And the thing, and I really love your business and your business idea. This To the Moon Digital, helping coaches in particular get leads, and use the power of the internet to get high quality leads. But then you ask yourself the question, well, what do I do with the lead once I've got it? Because I can get a high quality lead. And what I've found is the opposite of selling is what works when you're selling. So I call it collaboration, or the magic of collaboration, which I call collabradabra. And it's all about looking at building that relationship, because if you think like you're a coach, right, and you're an outstanding coach, and just say, for example, you're a fitness coach. You're working at a gym or working out of your own house. You're a fitness coach, and I'm looking for a fitness coach. I need you as much as you need me. So you don't need to sell me anything, because I'm already sold on the idea, if you like, of needing a coach or wanting a coach. This could be in any line of work. So you think, well, okay, and you think, if I feel like you're selling to me, there's going to be a couple of really negative things are going to happen. I mean, I ask yourself, I guess. When was the last time you felt you were being sold to? You feel, well, what happens? Well, you feel what? You feel a bit skeptical. You get a bit distance from the person. You put downward pressure on fees and rates. So I'd be asking, if you want to push clients away and get them being skeptical of you and put downward pressure on your fees, go ahead and sell as hard as you can, right? Once you get face to face. So what's the alternative? The alternative is building a collaborative relationship. Initially, particularly, so you can get them to become a client earlier and easier than through selling. Plus, the other idea I wanted to share with you is this whole lifetime value of a client. Because I've had some clients for over 20 years. They've moved organizations and kept me engaged corporately. Plus, if you think of your own sales force, your best sales organization is your own clients, because if you do a great job with them, people live in tribes. They will tell their friends what a great coach you are. Last winter, I got some swimming lessons. This guy took me to a pool. He videoed my stroke. And he talked about how my catch was too low. And then a high elbow catch in how I was swimming. He was great. He was a good guy. He taught me some really useful things. And of course, what did I do? I told all my swimming buddies in Bold and Beautiful what a great coach this guy was. He's probably got a dozen or so clients or more from me because he was a great coach. So you think, well, I built a relationship. I win that client then. I win them then long term, that lifetime value. Plus, I get all their friends and all their colleagues recommending you to them too. So it's the best way to go. If you want to watch your business boom after you've got some high quality leads from you, Alex, once you get face to face with those guys, or you can talk to them, or you're Zooming with them, go ahead and collaborate and just watch the business boom even more.
I think it's a really interesting point, actually, which the referrals thing is something that people don't mention enough in the coaching space. Maybe they'll do it. They'll say, okay, and who are two friends that we can contact today? They'll talk about a referral, but they don't focus enough on creating, a long-term relationship, because ego gets in the way. And I find that used to when I was younger in my coaching businesses, back when I was a health and fitness coach, like you were talking about, if somebody wanted to get out of the program or, you know, couldn't do it at the time, I would be so concrete in like, not a chance, Rebecca, you've signed the contract, you're paying me, that sort of thing. Not realizing that that's just the best way to make an extra $100 a week for 12 weeks, but the worst way to grow a business by delivering it, in my opinion, at the time.
You're absolutely right. And I think we all know that bad experiences get shared more often than good ones do. Like bad news travels better. You switch on any news channel, any news app, you'll read and hear more bad news than good news. So if they have a bad experience of you, it will travel super fast. Plus, what I find with collaborating in terms of building those client relationships is that is slow is fast. So if you take it super slow in the beginning, things happen much faster towards the end. So when you're collaborating, you think, okay, I'm thinking about what's the goal for this conversation. My goal is to uniquely understand what they're looking for, and to clarify whether my coaching approach is the appropriate one for them. Because what I don't want is a client I can't help. It's almost rather a sales process. It's a sorting process. I'm sorting through the people to find the ones I can genuinely help. So my goal is to uniquely understand what they're looking for, and then to clarify whether what I do, whatever line of coaching I'm in, will work for them. Then I'm going to it's going to take a little longer, but I'm going to close better. And then I'm guaranteed of getting a better result because I'm more comfortable. If I go into it with a goal of I'm going to sell this person my program, even before I've met them or spoken to them, that's a really toxic goal, and it's not going to work for you. You've got to think about that even from that very first moment before the conversation even starts. Think, my goal is to clarify what they're looking for. And if you like I do, look at exit research from clients, the number one thing clients are looking for when they're looking for a coach is they're looking for someone who uniquely understands my needs and my environment, whatever those needs and environment might be. So I might be looking for a financial coach, I might be looking for an accountant or a financial advisor or a fit, whatever the coach is I'm looking for. The sort of coaching I do is corporate coaching at a senior level. So I'm looking for senior people to coach. And those people are looking for me. And I'm thinking, well, what's the main thing they're looking for? Looking for someone that uniquely understands their needs and their environment. So, I remember one last story, Alex. Many, many years ago, when my wife was pregnant with our first baby, we were living in Bondi, right? Living in Bondi. At that time, there was a guy called Paul Graham, who was an ex-Mr. Olympia and a friend of Arnold Schwarzenegger's. He ran a gym in Bondi, right? And I thought, I was very fit then, doing a lot of running, a lot of swimming. I thought, I'd go to this guy's gym. He's Paul Graham, ex-Mr. Universe, Mr. Olympia. Went to the gym, introduced myself. Said, yeah, I've got a program just for you. And he gave me this. He worked out this particular program just for me, right? Just for me. Just for my weight loss, my strength and fitness goals, my swimming goals. A special program, Alex, just for me, just for Peter, right? I went home and told my wife, I said, honey, I just had this great program from this guy. He wrote it just for me. It was tailored. It was perfect. You know, he was an ex-Mr. Olympia, had this particular program for swimming and running and what I was looking for with weight loss and strength and conditioning. You should go and see him. And she was about 5 months pregnant then, right? So she went to see Paul Graham. She came back and said, it was great. And she showed me the program. It was exactly the same program that he gave me, right? So the five-month pregnant program for women was the same as my program. I think, well, really? And I'm still telling that story now. I told so many people I knew that don't see this guy. He's got these special programs just for you that are just for everybody. Right?
So it could be a coincidence.
So you've got to tell the other part of this too is you've got to tell the truth, right? You've got to tell the truth.
Yeah.
You've got to tell the truth. And just be a little patient up front. And like I was suggesting earlier, slow is fast. If you're a little bit slower in understanding needs and building relationship and looking more for a collaborative relationship, and even say to the client, look, It's great to talk to you, Alex. It's great having this conversation. Let's just have a conversation around what you're looking for, and then I can share the sort of approach I have, then see whether what I do fits with what you're looking for. It takes all the pressure off the conversation. And they go, great. You know, this is just the guy I need to talk to. And if it's not you, can recommend someone maybe a colleague of yours specializes in health and fitness for pregnancy and for mums with young babies, potentially, as I know that they do, and refer them to that person. They give it a more specialised service. Anyway, you've got to be careful about me, Alex, because I get on my soapbox about collaboration and I just don't get off it.
That's why you're here, mate. That's why you're here. So I wouldn't worry about it too much at all. It's interesting because one of the things I had written down about you was that you are very favorable to storytelling in terms of a sales conversation. Yes. And the most of what you've done today is tell us stories. And I think everyone's learning that you're a great guy to be around. So it's absolutely becoming, you're proving your own point there. Why do you believe storytelling is such an essential part of influence and how can we start to use it more effectively?
That's a great question. I've used stories quite deliberately and that's also just part of my style. One reason they work is this whole idea of what's called narrative transportation. And by that I mean, like, when you watch a great movie, I mean, one of the last great movies I watched was Maverick, the Top Gun sequel. I love that movie. And you get transported in the movie. So you feel like the characters do. Like when they're flying those jets through the mountains, you feel a bit anxious, you feel a bit scared. Or when one of the characters is falling in love, you feel that same loving feeling too. You get transported into the movie. So when you're telling a story, people get transported into the story. They start imagining what that would be like. And while they're transported into the story, they're more willing and able to accept a message that's embedded in the story. Because if you think about, okay, most of the ways that we receive information now, number one is on video, like on your phone or on your laptop. 80% of phone usage now is short form video, like TikTok and YouTube Shorts and so forth. Now, before then, there was books. Books were only invented or popularly printed from about 1770 onwards, but when Gutenberg invented the printing press. Before then, the whole way we learnt stuff from 1700 back about 300,000 years when language first developed was all by way of stories. And they've these archaeologists have even found in caves where they found the drawings that people told stories around, where we used to transfer information to each other. They found those drawings in the cave were in the parts of the cave where the echoes were biggest, which means they were making a very dramatic story to transfer information to each other about like where the beasts were, where the food was, where the enemy was. It was all very much an oral tradition. And if you think about pitching, that word that you used earlier, Alex, you think, well, the greatest pitching show in the world is what? Shark Tank. If you think of Shark Tank and the people professionally pitching there, only 60% of the entrepreneurs pitching in Shark Tank get an investment from the sharks. Of those, 80% tell stories. 80% of the winning pitches tell stories. And next time you're on YouTube, just check out one of the Shark Tank episodes from a guy called Kane Bodium. He's had the biggest ever win in Australian Shark Tank. And the stories he told, because he was pitching this coffee capsule. And they said, oh, why should we invest in this coffee capsule? He said, well, what's your story? He said, well, when I was a kid, my mum ran cafes and restaurants. She was the chef. She did all the cooking. And I was behind the coffee machine making coffee. I learned coffee then. I learned to love coffee. I learned to have coffee as like a relationship builder. And it's always been special to me since I was a kid. And he really engaged the sharks by saying, hey, coffee's in my DNA. And I've got this caffeine running through my blood, and that's why I love coffee, and that's why I'm here today to pitch these capsules to you. And it really engaged the sharks. You can see this guy. You can imagine him with his mum in this restaurant, her cooking the food, him making the coffee behind the machine. You think, yeah, I like this guy. Plus, you get to know people when they tell you a story. You know, that you get to, it's much more engaging. I mean, one thing I really can't handle, Alex, is PowerPoint presentations. I think, wow. I mean, when was the last time you did anything of any value in your life with PowerPoint? Like, hi, honey, I'm home. Let me give you a PowerPoint presentation about how much I care about you. Or, hi, kids, let me give you a PowerPoint about, you know, how to eat your dinner and go to bed. We don't use PowerPoint, but for some reason we get to corporate presentations, we open up PowerPoint and we're delivering PowerPoint to people. So forget PowerPoint, right? Just forget it. Just don't use it at all. Pitch with stories and have conversations collaboratively. And if I could just get those two messages across, and the listeners do those two things, your business will boom. It'll just watch the boom happen, right?
Yes. No, I love it. I completely agree. I've not ever sold with a PowerPoint presentation, except for when I've been delivering like a webinar. But even at that point, it starts to feel a little bit kind of like but wait, there's more kind of thing, you know?
It's good. It's good for a bit of structure. I mean, I run online workshops, of like virtual workshops, and I might use PowerPoint just to structure things, to keep things on track. I keep me on track. As you can tell, I tend to get a bit passionate, a bit crazy about what I'm talking about. So it's good to keep me on track and good to keep them on track. But really, it's about you and them. And every important relationship in your life, of every important relationship, none of them are based on PowerPoint. Zero. So by opening up a PowerPoint, what you're saying to a client is, you know what, I'm scared. I'm not very confident of what I'm saying. I don't know what I'm saying. I'm going to be reminded by all this PowerPoint. And I want to create distance between us by using a whole bunch of PowerPoint. You know, so, yeah, knock yourself out. Plus, I don't think you're smart enough to remember what I'm saying. So I'm going to have to put it up on words or show you a picture of a dog when I'm talking about a dog. Really? You know. Let's talk about dogs, picture of dog. I mean, I was working with a very large food, one of the biggest in the world, right? And they own a big pet care business. And they're talking about cats and pet care. And they're putting pictures of cats up there. I mean, I know what a cat looks like, right? I know what a bowl of food looks like. I mean, you're treating me like a complete moron. And how does that build relationship, you know?
It's a very interesting way of looking at it. I've never thought of the condescending nature of a PowerPoint presentation.
It's crazy. I mean, one I saw that really did work, one PowerPoint presentation, I was asked to be on a panel pre-COVID to help judge some presentations. They're looking for Australia's best presenter. And I was on the panel to help pick this. And the guy we picked that ended up winning was a baker from Bendigo. He called himself the Bendigo Baker, right? And he's got this huge baking business where people come in and eat like sweet treats that he bakes. And what he did was he just showed us photos of how his bakery had changed to become more client-centric. And his message was, you've got to make your business client-centric. And he just showed photos of his bakery, what he bought and what he developed and why it's so successful, because everything he does and did with his bakery was around making it a more hospitable and warm and engaging place for people that came in and ate his and bought his baked goods. So, but that was photos, and he spoke for 9 minutes. He probably showed us six or seven photos, no words, just photos. That was PowerPoint. I guess that was pictures, but he told the story with those photos. Plus, it added to his credibility because we could see the progression of these ideas. So it was real, and he was there. He looked like a baker. He was a skinny guy. I don't, for some reason, bakers are always skinny guys. I'm not quite sure why. They're eating all those pies and cakes and bread and stuff. Skinny guy looked like he just walked out of his baking shop, showing us the photo. Plus, the passion of this guy showing his photos of his bakery. He was really into his bakery. And passion's contagious. You can't bore somebody into buying something from you. You've got to be, if you're not excited about it, why should I be? Why should I be excited about engaging you as my coach if you're not excited about having me as a client, the sort of outcomes I can get with you? Yeah, be excited.
As long as you can then deliver upon the excitement you initially gave them.
When I was very amateur in my sales, I got very good at getting people overly excited and emotional on the phone about an end result. And so they they feel bulletproof as they're putting down a deposit, but the next day, because I'd move them from so far removed from their normal level of energy to kind of, speaking with such vigor and being so excited about their future, that then the next morning in the cold light of day, they were all freaking out, and I got lots of buyer's remorse when I went too far on the excitement. Jordan Belfort,
Ah, yes. Buyer's remorse. Buyer's remorse is real. They are most. I mean, whether you get excited or not, they are most unsure about their decision right after they've made it. So as soon as they've decided in your favor, as soon as they've said yes, you think. I mean, the curves go in opposite directions. The salesperson thinks, "Oh, great, they've said yes." And the buyers think, oh shit, I said yes. It's when they're most cautious. So, if you like, the selling, or in my case, the collaborating begins as soon as the client says yes. You have to over service after they say, like, ramp it up. You don't sort of, oh good, that's closed, I can relax now. No. You've got to ramp it up then. Invest more energy then. After that's when they're most vulnerable. That's when they're most unsure. And you ask yourself, when you buy, whether you're buying a book or a car or a house or buying a relationship, you're usually most uncertain right after you buy it. Right after you buy that car, you're driving it out of the yard or driving it away from where you bought it from. That's when you're most, oh shit, this car's not as great as I thought it was. It's always the way. So you've really got to amp it up. It's almost the opposite of what of common thinking. You think, oh, it's not. I think of it as, rather than closing a sale, you're then opening up the relationship, and that's when you've really got to overinvest, and that's when the business is going to boom. Whatever coaching business you may be in, and I know this because I'm not just showing you collaboration. I do this in my business too. I do this in my business too. I'm working now in 9 different countries. I'm running virtual workshops and face-to-face workshops and coaching sessions almost every hour of the day. So I'm not just saying this to say, go forth and do it. This is what I practice, and this is also what I coach when I'm talking to folks like you. And I would genuinely love to see you and your guys.
We had a little technical pause there, everyone listening. So instead of trying to pretend that didn't happen, we're moving on to the next question I had for Peter. Transparency is everything here on Coaches to the Moon. Mate, in your book, which I'll admit I haven't read, I've held a copy in my hand, but I'm waiting for my signed copy to be waiting for me next time I pick up in Warriewood.
You
You
did.
mentioned that there are 6 moments that matter in every conversation. I don't expect you to give away all 6, but I'd love to know a couple of them if you've got time for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mentioned one already, Alex. That's moment number one, which is before the conversation starts, to have a clear intention or a clear goal about how you want things to change by the end. I change how the person's thinking, feeling, or what they're doing. What I recommend is a useful goal for a very first conversation with a potential first client, is to uniquely understand what they're looking for. That can be the goal. And then if what they're looking for and what you do matches, fantastic. That's moment number one. I'll also talk about moment number two, which is about building rapport and I guess establishing relationship. And there's been a ton written on this about mirroring and matching and all the Moravian stuff. What I've found works best is to listen until you disappear. So you set the conversation up, you start asking questions, and then everything you're thinking about, all your intentions, all your goals, all those questions, just allow them to disappear and fully invest your attention in them. So you're getting present in yourself, you're getting present, you're getting very mindful, and then you're giving the gift of your presence to that other person. And I believe that's why it's called the presence, because it's the greatest gift you can give someone is your presence. And most of the time now, we are so distracted by other things, we're rarely giving somebody our presence. And they'll feel that presence. They'll feel like you are fully invested in them. And that's how you want them to feel from the first moment they're in contact with you, that, hey, you're there for them. because you only achieve your, if you're a coach, you know that you only achieve your goals when they achieve theirs. They always go first. It's always them first. You get nothing until they get something. And the more outcomes you can give for them, the more outcomes you're going to achieve for yourself too. So, and that begins with you first giving them your complete attention and listening until you disappear. And that is a subconscious message to them. Hey, I'm here for you. You're not here for me. I'm here for you. And ideally, we can have a relationship where I can help you achieve your outcomes, then I get to achieve mine. And you can be quite honest about that. You can say, I'm really keen to understand what you're looking for in a coach, just to clarify whether my approach is the right one for you or not. And that's a nice way for it to begin. And be confident enough and not desperate. No scarcity mentality. For every client you're looking for, there's three or four people out there looking for you. There's a ton of clients looking for people just like you, with your expertise, with your wisdom, with your care, with your sense of responsibility. Believe that to be true, because it is. And go out there, use an awesome service like Coaches to the Moon to get those high quality leads. And then once you've got the high quality leads and you're talking to them, think about, hey, even though it's a high quality lead, I need to ensure that the sort of approach I have is what it is that they're looking for. And think of that sort of relationship. And that's moment number two, establishing the relationship by listening until you disappear. Does that make sense, Alex?
It makes a tremendous amount of sense. And I'm very glad to hear you using those words, because I believe that as sales and conversations like this and prospecting is all basically done remotely through webcams now, it can be extraordinarily easy to have your mind wander when you've got open tabs and messages and emails coming through. I find myself doing it and I try to catch myself, but I don't always catch myself. And to hear a seasoned salesperson or collaborator like yourself remind us of that is very, very important. How have you found, before we go, mate, how have you found your approach to storytelling and collaborating and relationships change as business has primarily moved into an online and remote space?
It's definitely more challenging remotely and online, but it also opens up huge opportunities, Alex. I mean, during COVID in particular, I had to go up a very steep learning curve of understanding virtual workshop delivery, virtual coaching delivery. And initially, I found it very challenging and I didn't like it because I'm very much a face-to-face guy. But what I found is now I'm doing most of my coaching through Zoom and most of my workshops virtually. And the awesome thing about that is I'm doing Zoom coaching to people all over the world. I'm currently working with an organization that runs, get this, oil rigs in the North Sea, and I'm coaching people through Zoom when they're on their night shift, which is from midnight to dawn. I'm also coaching people in Queensland. I'm running virtual workshops now, virtual collaboration workshops on the east coast of the US. I'm running the workshop off the back of the podcast I'm doing in that part of the world. So I'm sitting in my office or in my studio, coaching and running workshops and not having to go outside the room, which is awesome. So it's turned from being a real challenge to being a huge bonus. Like now I think, wow, I've got to go into the city for a meeting. Wow, what a hassle. Why don't I just Zoom it? Save all that time and energy and all that parking or ferry and bus fares and everything else to get there. So it's a tremendous benefit. You do lose something when it's not face-to-face, though. You do lose a degree of connectivity that you do get when you're face-to-face, when you're coaching or running workshops. So what that means is you've got to work extra hard delivering a ton of value. I mean, clients will very rarely complain, oh gee, you know, Alex, he gave me so much value. I've got a real problem with that. I mean, you'll never get that. Just think about the coaching opportunity you've got with them and think, how can I make this every single experience, whether it's virtual or face to face, make it extraordinary for the people that you're coaching? Just make it extraordinary, make it exceptional for them. And every single moment is a moment to help change their lives in an extraordinary way. There's no like, oh yeah, one more coaching session. I got this. I got three sessions today. No, I've got three opportunities today to change someone's life. That's what I've got today. And I'm going to do everything I can, everything in my power to change that. And if it's virtual, it's definitely harder. But for coaches, it's also easier. You can sit in Zoom and do four or five coaching sessions in a row. A bit harder if you're doing physical, like training type coaching. That's a bit harder. But for people like me doing corporate coaching, I can sit here and do corporate coaching with people all over the world. I can sit here and run virtual workshops with people. So I'd love it. I've got more time for swimming. I've got more time for the five kids. I've got more time. You've only got two. I've got five.
My goodness.
I got more time for them. And the three girls, two boys. So they take up time, right? They take up time. They take up money. They take up energy. They take up car spaces. They're a bit older. So more time for them. So it's good and bad. But it's like anything in the world. Anything that happens to you, it can be good or bad. In my case, initially it was bad because I had to go up a very steep learning curve, but now I think this is awesome. I can sit here and do podcasts with you, even though you're about 100 metres away from me.
All the way from the next suburb. Amazing, the power of technology, hey?
The power of technology, yeah. I've had to bother walking at like 100 metres. Yeah,
it has been good. It has been good. It's been really, really nice, especially for me having the young kids. It was the same sort of thing. I suddenly, because I used to work in hospitality, very face-to-face, high energy, on your feet environment, front line with the customers or in the kitchen, you're, you know, close with the team all the time. Really, really great. I loved it. When I moved into online, I did start to struggle with it a little bit, but now, you know, the podcast, I've got 110 new friends all around the world. I can finish this meeting, be instantly back in there to put my kids to bed, be instantly back into another one. I think that the virtual world, as we embrace it, if we can take on tips like you've given us today to listen, collaborate, be present with people and just form those relationships, I think it's really important. And hopefully we're moving in the right direction, Peter, and guys like you are keeping us on track.
Perfect. Perfect.
Thank you so much for sharing with us today, mate. It's been a very refreshing conversation. We've talked about sales, but we haven't even mentioned the word money, which is awesome. And I think that is the kind of longevity that we need in business. So can you hear my kids in the background there? Going
no, bonkers. I can't hear them.
There we
How
go.
Little How little are they?
They're two-year-old twins.
Oh, two-year-old twins. Okay, two. Cool. Okay, that's a challenging time.
It is just around bedtime, nap times. The rest of the day, they're pretty awesome. But around nap times, it gets a bit rough. So, mate, thank you so much, Peter, for being here today. The book is Calabra Cadabra. Calabra Cadabra.
It rhymes with Abracadabra. It's the magic of collaborative conversations. You could be one conversation away from anything you want, guys. So check it out. And also totally just check me out on YouTube too. I've got a ton of YouTube content. Just type in Peter Anthony collaboration in YouTube. You'll find me or the collaboration guy, the ton of stuff in there for nothing. It will reinforce lots of what we've been talking about today.
I love your content. And we're going to be putting all the links for anyone watching up and down, above, all around the show notes for this episode. And I can't wait for you to see more content from Mr. Peter Anthony. And I can't wait to hang out with you in person in the coming weeks, mate. Thank you so much for being here today.
Absolute pleasure. Bye, Alex.
Anyone listening live or on the recording, we love you for that. I'll be back on Thursday with another episode of Coaches to the Moon. Until then, thank you so much. Much love and peace out.